So welcome to another episode of the Digital Fitness Podcast. My name is Lieke de Vries. I am joined by Mark Meinema, co-founder of Digital Fitness. And the two of us are really happy to say hello to our guest, Bob Dodo. Bob, so glad you could be with us today. Thank you for that. The podcast is called the Digital Fitness Podcast. And for that reason, I'm going to ask Mark to give us a short overview of what digital fitness is, actually.
Yeah, so digital fitness is something me and my co-founder Martijn Aslander started about 3 years ago, almost four. This entails more than just digital skills. So we noticed that a lot of people have been talking about the need for more digital skills for the better part of, I don't know, four decades, if not longer. But digital fitness is more about how we humans are using computers to be more effective, because the promise of using computers as a tool was that we would be more effective, that we had these great new tools that could automate stuff and make everything better. That turned out quite differently for most people. And we're approaching digital fitness from five angles, as it were. First of those is digital awareness. We need people to be aware of the tools that are around them and which tools might be useful to them, and which of them are not useful. The second one is digital hygiene. So, how do we deal with this onslaught of information that's coming toward us, and how would we prevent going crazy because of the information? How do we select the right information, and how do we make sure that people who have no right to that information don't get it? Then there's digital skills, because to do anything with digital stuff, you do need some skills to practice. The fourth element is maybe really interesting for our conversation that we'll have this hour. That is personal knowledge management, how to deal with the information that is of any interest to you, and how to capture, save, find, and share all that information to the world around you, which makes you far more useful as a person, as a professional. And the fifth one is personal growth through technology. So using technology consciously to become more than you are right now, or to function better. So that is what we look at when we talk about digital fitness.
Mm-hmm. And Bob, you've been around in the personal knowledge management world for a while, actually. And I have to admit that last year, when we started preparing for our first PKM summit, a lot of names popped up immediately, and yours wasn't on that first list for some strange reason. But afterwards, or not afterwards, during the process, I should say, it did come up. And in the meantime, you've also written a book very specifically related to personal knowledge management. But let me ask you, how would you introduce yourself to a new audience?
A PKM audience? I have a lot of different audiences, it turns out. So I introduce myself differently to all of them. I'm very minimalistic when it comes to these sort of things, knowledge management in particular. I am part of the reason you may not have had me on any sort of guest wish lists the first time around. You know, I'm not really involved in tech things. I'm not a developer. I'm not a coder. I don't really know much about those things. I studied English. I studied poetry. I studied writing. This is my area of focus. Much to my excitement, because I get to learn from these people, the people in the PKM scene that I engage with and encounter are much more well-versed in kind of the intersection of, you know, consciousness and technology and how our brain works and these kinds of things. And good for them, they get to be on those lists before I do, because they're a lot more well-versed in those subjects. But for me, you know, I take and willfully take a more narrow focus when it comes to PKM. And it has to do with writing, because I am a writer. And lately it has to do with the topic of Zettelkasten, and, you know, the inspiration coming from Nicholas Luhmann's take on a Zettelkasten, at least. So that's sort of where I position myself in this world. I try to, know my scope, my range, And that's where I fit in the PKM world these days. But I have many interests, and my history in writing extends much farther than Zettelkasten. And so, yeah.
But it's still, it's a real interest. It's not like a side thing you do, because it is, as far as I can gather, your practice of personal knowledge management is a very large fundament to all the other stuff you do.
Yeah, especially these days. And I mean, I almost exclusively am unpacking Zettelkasten and PKM and writing over the past 5 years. I mean, much to my friends, you know, disappointment, maybe, I don't know. That's all I talk about. It's all I'm reading about these days. Give or take some books here and there, but it is a fundamental aspect of who I am now. And certainly the subjects that I cover.
How would you measure success in personal management?
That you don't have to think about it too much. You know, that's how I measure it, is that, or let's put it this way, that when you think about it, it's a choice, that I'm not constantly tinkering, constantly rebuilding. There's always going to be some zhuzhing of my systems as I go, new mm-hmm. context, new information comes in that needs to be handled differently. But on the whole, I feel personally successful if, when I go to do something, the system is there to support that something. And that something is usually writing for me. So the system is there, it supports it, and I don't have to reinvent the wheel. Sorry, there's someone honking on my road here.
Well, you're living in New York, right?
Welcome to the city life.
I'm surprised it lasted this long, yeah.
No, but that's okay. So basically, a good PKM system from your perspective is one that supports you, that after a full day's work, you look back and you know, I feel supported. I wasn't left standing without the stuff that I needed to know or being able to find at the moment I needed it.
Absolutely. Yeah. That sort of coming back is an important part of it. Coming back to the system the next day and saying, okay, where did I leave off? What was I thinking? Because like you mentioned earlier, the onslaught of information coming in, that takes a toll. You know, certainly with me, by the next day, I don't remember what I wrote about. I don't remember where mm-hmm. I left off. And the system I have, and the system that I imagine you all have too, allows us to come back to the things we did the day prior, or even a few hours earlier, certainly a week or a month later, and have a sense of where I was headed, what I wanted to do, what was my thinking at the time. And that is an enormous, and has become an enormously positive part of my whole interaction with writing and knowledge management.
And do I understand it right that this is a fairly recent thing for you?
Writing, no. I've been writing since I was a child, mm-hmm. And I've always had a system, but that system was very duct taped together, I call it. You know, it was just not high functioning, at least not in regards to the people around me. Pardon? I live on a road that's supposed to be a very quiet road, but it turns out there's a lot of traffic on it
today. Someone decided to end that quiet.
Yeah, someone is probably double parked, and that's my fear, is when that happens, then the horns start going. All that said, with regards to Zettelkasten and PKM, I would say maybe 5 years ago, maybe six, I started, these terms started popping up. And I've always been enamored with systems. I've always been enamored with the way people handle their work. Mm-hmm. Just started piquing my interest. And then it was just kind of off to the races once I started picking up on this stuff.
So I gather you're a curious person.
Extremely so.
A lot of stuff comes by that you might find interesting. Mm-hmm. What triggered you? Can you remember what really pulled you into Zettelkasten?
The idea of having a system to get something done, so GTD, right? That was 2013. I came across that book. So that was always banging around in my head, this idea of like, man, it'd be really great to have a system. And that was a very vague term at the time. When I encountered Zettelkasten, the thing that hooked me wasn't so much that it was a writing system or a thinking system. It was that it was a non-linear, or at least it held space for non-linear, non-ordinary ways of handling information and non-ordinary ways of information interacting. I immediately latched on to Nicholas Luhmann's, terminology of heterogeneous things and order and disorder and chaos and that sort of stuff. I was like, oh, here's a system that is embracing the negative space, embracing the unknown aspects, embracing losing things like nodes, working with that. That was immediately attractive to me, fit right in with, so many of my other interests and thoughts, and that was it. I was definitely hooked.
It sounds like it's less reductionist than a lot of other systems might be.
It's very flexible, very plastic in the sense that it's malleable. The more I read and reread Nicholas Luhmann's take on the Zettelkasten, but also his take on systems and take on, the way humans interact and his attempt to try and understand that, the more I see his appreciation for blurry boundaries, his appreciation for, letting things not be perfect, and a system that can handle that is for me a very important system, because I'm not a perfectionist. I'm not a type A person. I like things getting messed up a little bit. I like those fuzzy areas. So this system allows for that.
You did call your book a system for writing, right? Mm-hmm. So that, even though you just said it's a quite a wide panorama of things that are into the focus of the book is for very specific. Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
It came about after years of practice writing and thinking on things and really accepting that, drawing a line isn't the right term. Keeping my focus narrow allowed me to achieve depth much easier. I wrote this book because I saw many holes in the Zettelkasten literature out there. A lot of kind of grand narratives about it and, broad strokes and miscommunication, all kinds of things. And I thought, oh, I could speak to all of that, or I could speak to this one aspect of how this system can be leveraged. And that one aspect was something that I use it for, which is for writing. So I decided, and I also was encountering so many people who wanted to write more, and wanted, for whatever reason, to use this system to do it. So I chose to kind of take the narrow path and say, here's this system presented as a system for writing.
Okay. And at the same time, I can imagine that this also would help people who do not necessarily call themselves a writer, but have a different profession, because through your narrow focus, they can see how you put this into actual practice. And that may make it even easier to translate to another type of work. So, because we have within our trainings for digital fitness, we have a lot to do with people who work in corporate or government environments. And they also really like to be creative, capture ideas, and we're also, maybe you have a thought on that too. How, for instance, if you're working in a corporate environment, how would people be able to apply what they can gather from your book? Do you have an idea about that?
I'll start just by saying that I agree with you. I believe it is a belief of mine that you can take a narrow path and talk about something that's very specific in such a way that it translates to a broader audience. I see this happen all the time. You know, I'll read a book on something that's very niche, but it's applicable. It's somehow inspiring me in other areas of my life.
Yeah.
So I find those books very inspiring. So I tried to write that book. How would it translate to a corporate environment was your question?
Yeah.
The system is there, I think, laid out quite frankly and quite plainly, intentionally plainly, so that people can take it, like you say, and interpret it for their own use case. That was something I really tried to do. Even though I was using writing as my focus, I tried to let the book be simple with a capital S, you know? So for me, the way of, you know, the discussions about, okay, you have an idea, you write it down on this so-called fleeting note. That's applicable to anybody. We all take those notes, right? The move towards, okay, this note isn't the end of its life. It can have a new life if you were to take it and transform it into something else is, I think, again, applicable. So you have meeting notes, for example, and you could say, okay, I'm just going to leave those notes. That's certainly what I would have done, is just leave them in my notebook. But there's another step you can take, which is to take these notes out, isolate the ideas so that you can see them better. So, and now you can distribute them to different people, you know, on your team, whatever the case may be. The idea that a note, that just because you wrote something down, it is not the end of its life, is, I think, applicable beyond, certainly beyond writing, you know, team building, team working, you know, recipes. I mean, it could be for anything, really.
Yeah, that's a good thing. The realization that you can just jot something down somewhere and then revisit that and evaluate if that what you call fleeting note, that's a really great term for it, how that could be part of something larger if you add some metadata links or whatever to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Giving yourself something that when you come back to it, it feels good, right? It could be as general as that. It's like, rather than coming back to this little piece of paper that's crumpled up and folded from my pocket, it's in a card catalog or in a box or on your laptop. And it's like, when I come back to this note, I feel like I'm being taken care of here.
Yeah. Is your system a digital system, an analog system? Does it
mostly
cover both?
Mostly digital. I use Obsidian for the vast majority of everything I do with regards to writing and note taking or note making more so. But I'm, you know, 46 years old. I grew up writing on paper and carrying a notepad in my pocket. I still do today. I still take notes on index cards from time to time, and I eventually incorporate them in. So it's not quite a hybrid system, but you know, I'm still old school in a lot of ways. Even my digital system is basically replicating a paper system. It's very pared down.
Right. And even without any digital device on hand, you could still capture stuff and bring it in.
Absolutely.
To a system later on. Okay, good. I just realized that we've been talking about Zettelkasten for a while now, but not everybody might know the term. Necessarily. How would you define Zettelkasten? Is it a system? Is it a tool? Is it?
That's a good question. I mean, the way I define it is that a Zettelkasten is in the original sense a catalog of slips of paper with notes on them. Nicholas Luhmann took a unique take on how to work with this particular box of slips, and did so in such a way that allowed ideas to relate to one another across topic. So typically in the olden days, most people in the today days, most people organize their information according to category or topic. Nicholas Luhmann was actively and proactively more so trying to disrupt that so that ideas would speak across topic. That's integral to his whole, you know, a systems theory, which I am not an expert on, but you read a little bit of it, you kind of get the sense that he's really trying to get things to interact that seemingly should not. So the Zettelkasten is a note-taking or note-making system that allows ideas to interact across topic or across category. Most, okay, and it's most basic.
And it's not limited to one particular digital tool or one particular analog tool, right? It's a way of doing stuff that you can implement in your direct environment in various forms and tools.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, you can have your, you know, so-called analog system, your paper-based system in wooden boxes or whatever. You can translate that into a digital platform. You can have hybrid systems. You can have your, you know, there's different classes of note types in a Zettelkasten, just a handful. Some of those can be exterior. You know, you could take your reading notes on paper and your main notes and digital. It's very flexible in that regard.
Okay. So we've settled that. I'm going through a list of questions, and I was just remembering that maybe not everybody knew
sure.
what Zettelkasten were. Let's go back to the digital fitness and perspectives that Mark mentioned. One of them is called, the first one he mentioned actually, is digital awareness. You just mentioned your age and that you grew up using pen and paper. Around us, a lot of people are talking about this digital generation or even these digital generations that have been growing up now in a completely digital world. But more and more, I also hear that we maybe overestimate the digital ability of those younger generations. So the co-founder of Digital Fitness and the PKM Summit, Martijn Eslander, had a question for you. Mm-hmm. He says, after conducting thorough research in the Netherlands, so it might be local, we couldn't find a single institution in the entire education system teaching people how to effectively capture, organize, store, and retrieve snippets of information at all, and let alone within seconds. And why seconds? Because if it takes too long, the moment of thought just gets lost in the noise because there's so many distractions. So here's the question for you. What would you consider the absolute minimum set of information skills that the average 25-year-old should know, understand, and master?
The minimum information skills. I would say that the ability to collect or capture and curate the information you're taking in so that you have choices, right? When you engage in information passively, and by that I mean just scrolling, and you don't have some place to put the things that catch your attention, it all flattens. It all just becomes information. And I feel like that's a crucial aspect of why so many of us, me included at times, feel just inundated, right? Mm-hmm. But when you start to collect or capture, you inevitably start to curate, I find, because you start to see, oh, you know, these, you know, notes on articles on surfing, you know, really capture my attention. So you find yourself pulling articles out of your feed that have to do with a particular subject. In my experience, and I think it's true for a lot of people, that inevitably starts to tell you something about yourself. You start to say, oh, I'm interested in this. I'm taking a lot of, or capturing a lot of things here. Maybe I should do something with it, right? So it becomes less of like just being pummeled and more of an experience of taking in and putting it somewhere to use. Now, in our field, this PKM field, that's just the very beginning, right? That's where PKM sort of begins. But I don't think people even know to do that, or so many people know to even do that, that they can do that, that there's a reason to do that. So at the bare minimum, it should be capture and curation, right?
Yeah, I guess those two, not just capture, because the thing is that people sort of have started to capture information by emailing to themselves, or they find all kinds of ways that are semi-effective at best. Mm-hmm. But then curating the information is something that the only way people really curate information, if you can even call it that, would be putting the information as files or documents into a hierarchy of folders where, yes, if you know what to look for, you can find it back, but you miss out on all the non-hierarchical stuff. So linked information, what you just told us, this is the main motivation for to use something like Zettelkasten, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that ability to have information speak to one another of your own making, right? That you're establishing the connections is really important, because everyone's establishing something out there. But what are you, what's your take? Why is this article important to you? And does it relate to anything else that you have recently been thinking about? That ability is super important.
Yeah, and as you have been an educator yourself for many years, so you know from the inside out, from the inside perhaps, the answer to this question. Do you know why PKM methods like Zettelkasten or something similar has never been, why did that never, well, has that never been adopted in schools or universities? Because this is not that new.
You know, I take what I think may be a different approach to questions like this than some of my like PKM colleagues. You know, there is just a sociological aspect to this, which is, you know, in fact, I was just talking to someone the other day. I consider myself a smart, intelligent person, but I wasn't like I had a note-taking system in school. I just kind of hung out. You know, I hung out. I had friends. I had perfect attendance, mind you. I used to get a little awards at the end of the year for perfect attendance. And I would get this perfect attendance because I just liked being in those social interactions. You know, I like my friends were in school. So why am I going to not go to school? Of course, I'm going to go to school. And I paid attention. I was friendly with teachers. I did the work. But I wasn't overly invested in like a system for this sort of learning. And I think for a lot of people in school, yes, they want a system. They want to learn better, but they also want to get by. They want to have a good time doing it. And, you know, PKM systems and Zettelkasten, these, I think for a lot of people, feel tacked on to the experience. It's like, I'm here, I'm in school, the teacher's talking, I'm writing down my notes. What more do you want me to do? Mm-hmm. And I think there's just a sense of that I'm doing what I need to do to get by. They feel affirmed by their social group. You know, they can have conversations with people. They can talk about like intelligent things. So they feel like they're learning. So why do I need to add this? Like, why do I need to learn about Obsidian? Why do I need to, you know, I think there's that, especially at that age, you know. That said, I think we're at the very beginning of this work. I think it's clear we're at the beginning of PKM and knowledge management in Zettelkasten. We're still trying to figure out what to do with it. Yeah. So I think once it becomes kind of rote for us, it can trickle down into education systems in a way that doesn't make it feel tacked on. It makes it feel kind of part of the fabric of the whole experience, but we still have to figure out what a literature note is, right?
Yeah. In a way, maybe education also is a reactionary system. It mm-hmm. stuff is added or taken out of education based on a longer process of coming to grips with the new realities. And maybe this digital world with its information abundance is still too new to require these abilities to become part of an educational system.
Absolutely. You know, there's the market economy aspect. There's all sorts of things that go into education. Is obviously not just, you know, kids in a classroom, what's the best way? You know, it's teachers, it's unions, it's, you know, are they getting paid enough? Are they burned out? Like, there's so many things that go into being a teacher and that relationship between student and teacher that affects what is presented to a student. So it's a comprehensive, it has to be approached from a comprehensive perspective, I think, not just what's a system to give students, but what's a system to support teachers, you know, that kind of stuff as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at the same time, what I can remember from school, and what I've seen with my two stepsons as well, is that if they want to, if they have to work with information, with knowledge, they're given at present still, they're given no tools mm-hmm. at all, like nothing. And right. I agree with you. We're not there yet. We don't know everything we should know, but I would say we know more than nothing, but we're offering them absolutely nothing. So if people want students to memorize something, they will just say, go memorize. Mm-hmm. and they'll never tell you how, or go figure out, this is the literature. Make sure that you know how what's in there.
Yeah.
And it's then like, people grab their books and just underline stuff, but they don't know what they're doing and we're not helping them.
It reminds me, and I've thought about this before, like it reminds me of home ec. In the US, we had a course called home ec you would take, which is home economics. And you would, every student would take it in high school. And it was basically like how to boil water, how to clean your sink. It was the simple stuff of the home, but you didn't learn how to balance a checkbook at the time. It was, we were using checks. You didn't learn any sort of money management. You just kind of learned. I remember learning that you had to dry the sink with a rag. That's what I took away from home economics. But there, yeah, it's important. I still do it. But that said, there's what a great thing it would be to offer digital economic course or whatever, not monetary, but like you're talking about digital literacy, social media literacy, things like that. I think students would absolutely be into that, learning, mm-hmm. You're giving me all this information, student says, but you're not telling me how to work with it. Like you were saying, Mark, what an awesome course that would be. Right.
And how plausible to have an escape route, so to speak, to go to ChatGPT or any other AI service to help you process this overload on information if you don't have any other directions from your teacher on it.
Sure. Yeah, it's an obvious go-to if you weren't taught anything else.
Yeah. So you've been in education. Are you still teaching?
I still teach online. I don't teach in like a formal institution anymore. Okay. I stopped that right as COVID hit, actually.
But could you still offer practical steps for other teachers, educators to help their students get into this groove, so to speak?
It's a big question.
it was two words. Capture, collect, curate, or three words.
It's so hard for me. I mean, I have like a quick answer. Like, sure, teach them Obsidian or whatever, teach them how to in an atomic note. But it's so difficult for me to answer. I guess because I have been in that field for so long, it's very hard for me to answer that without immediately starting to think about, well, how do you get, like, where do you even put this in the class? As someone who I have built classes, I obviously taught classes. You think, okay, who are these teachers? Like, where in their class, syllabus is this going? That's what I immediately start thinking of is like, is it day one? Is it day five? Is it the day before the exam? So where does this happen? So that's where I start getting caught up. That said, I think there's, again, I'm off running here because so much of education and at least at the high school level is about regurgitation. That's a particular kind of learning, right? I can't just say, well, you should all start using a Zettelkasten and then think creatively and non-linear think. It's like the student,
it doesn't match.
The student wants to, the teacher wants something. The teacher's required to get something from a student more so. And the student needs to deliver. So that kind of takes us out. We were just talking about this yesterday in the Discord, the Obsidian Discord, about the implementation, the potential for implementing Zettelkasten in a high school setting. It takes you out of that, because it's so much about creative thinking, which unfortunately is not the focus of many courses. So I'm not giving you an
answer.
That's
a really interesting point. This is a really interesting point. Basically, if I understand you correctly, you're saying that, yes, you can teach them Zettelkasten, but if they have nowhere to go with this, like if they have no creative thinking to do as part of their tuition, students may very well reject it because it doesn't get them to the regurgitating that they have to do for school, right?
Well, this is exact. So I asked someone in the chat was saying, you know, like, it's not really applicable in schools. And I was like, okay, I understand that. I've even like maybe hinted at that, but has anyone ever tried it? And a number of people were like, yeah, I actually did. They're like, I learned about Zettelkasten a few years ago. I tried it in my, I forget which course it was. It was like a maths course or something. And they said, I abandoned it because I couldn't find what I needed right away. It wasn't like the teacher wanted something else from me that this wasn't necessarily giving me. So I just went back to, you know, taking notes in my notebook and just sussing it out as I went. There were others who chimed in and said, I used it in my medical course for a little bit and it was helpful, but it wasn't, I didn't like use it as a universally for everything I was studying. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, people have this sense of, this Zettelkasten is great for creative thinking, great for making connections, great for putting things together that you weren't quite sure went together. Not so great for regurgitation.
Which makes up a whole chunk of current education.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, so much of it's about that.
Okay.
So even in writing, I mean, I studied English, but so in an English degree or English courses, I could see it being very helpful because you're giving interpretations, you're reading a book, you're speaking to a theme in a book or something. But yeah, I mean, school is such a unique, I really think of the classroom and the school setting as an extraordinarily unique situation. It's time, you know, they've only got 14 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's an, you know, 2 hours a day. If sometimes it's my courses in college were 3 hours a week. That was it. You know, it's, there's a lot of pressure in that time. And a Zettelkasten works really well with room, you know, room to breathe.
So it wasn't really a fair question then.
I'm sorry. No, totally fair question. I'd give an unfair answer, I think. It's about unions.
Yeah. Well, let's hope they'll still be around in a couple of years, because I think they're very important, because your answer speaks to a number of things. One, a Zettelkasten approach to your PKM might very well help you foster your creativity or channel it or help it develop further. It doesn't match with very rigid environments that are based on repetition and regurgitation, as you call it. But also you hint to it is a method or a tool that you use within a context, which can be huge and has all these other factors that also influence it, so that sometimes it's not a fair fight, so to speak, to implement something in an environment that just will not welcome this new tool or this new way of working.
I'm very practical when it comes to Zettelkasten, and I talk to a lot. I spend most of my day interacting with people who are new to Zettelkasten or want to know or have problems with it. I mean, it's a lot of what I do over the past 5 years. And I often find myself saying Zettelkasten may not be the right thing for what you're looking to do right now, but like the second brain might be better, or maybe Nick Milo's system or something, you know. Tiago's second brain is really, really about putting in and storage and retrieval, what I would call it. Storage, where you find places for things and you're able to retrieve them when you need them, but only when you need them. Nicholas Luhmann, in his notes, explicitly states that this system is not about storage and retrieval. He said that's maybe in the beginning, you have a couple hundred notes or 50 notes or whatever, and you have them in there and you pull them out when you need them. But over time, this system is meant to break down. Like, you should be getting lost in your system. I mean, it's basically what he's saying. You know, you should go in, look for one thing, but find another thing. I mean, the people closest to him, closest to his system, and the man himself are talking about the benefits of getting lost. Not something you want to be doing when it's crunch time and for your physics exam, right? Or your anatomy, you know, exam, more importantly, or whatever, you know, science. Well,
where to cut?
That's so interesting, because when preparing for this, I have this scatterbrain ADHD. Well, it's not a problem. It's just how my brain's wired. And sure. I was, when I read about Zettelkasten before, I thought, oh, this is the getting lost thing seems like something risky. Like thoughts might just be not connected at all to something, and that may lead them not to be resurfaced. But if I'm listening to you, that's not a risk. It's actually a quality that you can get lost in these things, or that years after you put some note in there, you might just find it back even when you're not looking for it.
1,000%. I will go to the grave taking this stance that I think is missing in a lot of Zettelkasten discourse, which is that Nicholas Luhmann had a keyword index. Okay, let's just use this as an example. And keyword index for him was that there was a word in a note maybe that he wanted to notate somewhere else so they could find it again. According to Johannes Schmidt, who's the primary researcher of Nicholas Luhmann's Zettelkasten, his actual physical Zettelkasten, Nicholas Luhmann at most had 4 references for a keynote, for a keyword. In other words, you know, if he used the word system in his notes, there are at most 4 notes he would record that had that word in a system of 90,000, right? So it's so not about finding the one note, not at all. It's about getting into a space within your Zettelkasten and seeing where it leads, right? He talks about anyone who enters my Zettelkasten will come up with a different systems theory. Someone else takes my Zettelkasten, they'll come up with a different systems theory because of the number of pathways you can take. Kesserling talks about that. Schmidt talks about that. These are people very close to his system. And they're all talking about you can enter it from any place, and where you enter determines what you'll find, right? And if 2 people enter at the same place, they might find 2 different things, right? So it's so much about this maze-like play. There's a lot of play I get from Nicholas Luhmann's Zettelkasten. That's very different from sometimes a very necessary system that you need to just find things. You know, here's a quote I got from a vendor. I need that. I don't put that in my Zettelkasten.
No, do you have another system for that, or?
I have a very basic, folder system that I just use for that kind of stuff. I tried the paras and I tried some of the other things. I quickly realized that I just have a way of doing it. And I kind of remember my life is small enough that I can remember most things, and there's search.
Yeah. There's, we tell people that we make them aware that there's something like para, not because it's the method, but if you're looking for one, this is a simple one. But on the other hand, there's a lot of people who ask us, yeah, but do we need to use para? Well, does it, whatever you're doing now, does it work for you? So, and my definition of working is, if you're looking for something and can you find it within a minute? Mm-hmm. And if the answer is yes, then, well, there's no need to change anything. Whatever your system is, I don't care.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm of the same mindset.
And of course, with these modern tools like Obsidian, you can also do sort of a hybrid approach, making notes that sort of a function as a map of content sort of thing. So it could be a kind of hybrid system as well. But if I understand you correctly, that's not your way of approaching this, or?
So I should clarify, you know, I was speaking a bit kind of loosely on that. When I think about like just files on my laptop or something, it's just kind of folders, you know, where things are. When it comes to my writing, which is like my primary focus in Obsidian, I do have, I don't have necessarily maps of content, but I have notes that are maps. So maybe they are maps of content. You know, I keep logs, you know, I keep a log of what I did that day, what I was working on and why. So I have systems for that for sure. A system that I kind of developed on my own that allows me to get back into things as I need to. My writing projects, they are organized by folder. And I use a very loose sort of Johnny Decimal kind of thing. I'm not very strict about it, but it's like you said, it's enough that I can always find things. And I really work with in the book, the last chapter of the book talks about this. I really work with my daily journal and my creative log. Those are the 2 things that work in tandem with one another. And that's how I find everything I need. You know?
So let's get to a question from one of your students, Muhammad Ali Klitsch and Mark Bogers. They are wondering, what are the reasons that one can become stuck in the Zettelkasten process, and how to get unstuck, make it a regular practice?
Mm-hmm. How to get stuck. Let me think. I mean, I find people get stuck with Zettelkasten in the beginning, and I think that they get stuck because they're just not doing it enough. Now, I don't mean that to be like whipping, you know, cracking the whip. I just mean that you really don't know what's going on until you start doing it. It's just one of those things. It's mm-hmm. hard to really get it at 3 notes, 10 notes, 20 notes, but you also don't need 10,000. You know, you can have 100 notes. I remember at about 100 notes, I was like, oh, I get this. You know, I wasn't perfect at it yet. I didn't really know exactly what was going on, but I sort of got it. And it also, the stressor I find with people is when they're not creating output. Mm-hmm. So things are going in and they're like, yeah, I'm doing this, but what am I doing with it all? And that's my question for them. What are you doing with it all? If you have an output, that's where the stress tests start to happen. That's when I know, okay, is this thing working for me? Can I use it for writing? It's my only, at this point, my only purpose for it. Mm-hmm. And ideating and stuff. But, mm-hmm. you know, so that's really where I see a lot of the problems. Once people are in, once they're in, you know, hundreds of notes or so, and they're maybe writing some stuff or using it for thinking or whatever, I find that the problems kind of go away because they've got their use cases, right? And their use cases and the system kind of inform one another and kind of find a balance somewhere. I forgot the second part of this question.
It's also about reflecting. Why am I doing this? Is it bringing me what I need it to bring me?
And that's a point that someone either has or doesn't. You know, there wasn't, I don't think I really ever encountered a why am I doing this moment, because I think I was just so enamored with it and so enamored with the topic of Zettelkasten is so interesting to me, to the point where it just bleeds into so many other interests of mine that there's never really a question of why. The question that might come up for me is, do I need it forever? Right? Because I came to this as, I didn't develop this to start writing. I was already writing. I wrote tons before I had a Zettelkasten. The question is like, how long will I use my Zettelkasten? I see no end in sight currently, but you know, Nicholas Luhmann at the end of his life was like, okay, I did the Zettelkasten. The notes I'm taking now just go in a box. And that's the last years of his life. He talks about it in an interview. It's really interesting. He's like, yeah, the system I have now is if I have a note on, you know, constitutions, it just goes into the constitution box under my desk because it's for writing drafts. He didn't need to link anymore. He had 90,000 notes. What, mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
Yeah, so. I mean, a system serves you until it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Another question, because these two people, Muhammad Ali and Marco, are far from beginners. I've taken a peek in Muhammad's PKM, and I was blown away by the huge amount of not very hierarchically organized, but very much linked notes that he has mm-hmm. on a gazillion topics. So he's not a beginner, but if someone's looking at this, listening to this and think they go like, okay, what's the first baby step to do this? And the reason I ask this is we've noticed when we've given courses that many people want to start, but they want to get it right the first time. Then because they want to get it right, which is impossible the first time, they don't start. So what would be the first baby step to actually start with this?
I mean, that's an enormous point, and that speaks to what I didn't actually get to say, but was informing what I was answering before, which is that people stumble at the beginning because they're so protective of it, getting it right the first time. They have this fear that what if I end up 5 years from now and I did the numbering system all wrong? You know, that this is an actual fear, which I get. I mean, I had a similar fear in the beginning. I changed my numbering system in the first 6 months. I remember I went through every note and changed them all. The way to get started is to accept that you're going to take single idea notes. Okay, we'll start with this term. We can fudge with that as we go. But at the beginning, accept that your notes are going to be single idea notes. Don't worry about how small, how single, just a general idea per note. You take one of those, let's say it's in Obsidian. You open a file, you put that note in there. And then the next time you have a note, you do the same thing, but you just ask yourself this other question. Does it relate to that other note I took? If it does, state at the bottom or somewhere that, you know, this relates to this note and state why. That's imperative. Very important. The next time you take a note, you say, does it relate to any of my other notes? It doesn't. That's okay. Same process. Put it in there. Goes to the bottom or wherever it files. And you do this over and over again. And that's how you start developing this network. You take the note, you put it in your Obsidian or whatever platform you use, and you ask yourself, does it relate to anything else? That's very different than a storage and retrieval system like a so-called second brain, like Tiago's second brain. Yeah. You don't have to ask yourself, does this article on sailing have anything to do with potty training my child? You don't need to ask that question. But in a Zettelkasten, you would ask that question. You would say, does the techniques I'm learning in this sailing article have anything to do with child rearing? Oh, this one thing does, make that connection. If it doesn't, don't worry about it. But that's the main difference I find between the systems. And that's how I would tell people to start this one.
And does that starting, having these separate ideas and separate notes is one thing. And does that starting also entail using something like a daily journal, daily note? Because that's an easy gateway to get these fleeting notes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you want some way of capturing your ideas. And that can be, there's a different one for every person. One is if you're using something like Obsidian, you have a daily note. I have a daily journal, but it's 1 year long. So it's just the date, today's date is at the top and tomorrow's date will be above that. And I just clip it at a year just for arbitrary reasons. That's how I do it. And in that goes some fleeting notes. But I have lots of places to take notes as I mean, thoughts down as they come to me. You want to have some place, some way of capturing ideas but if you're just talking about just starting, and I want to get them out of their journal and into Zettelkasten, it would be single idea notes asking that question.
Oh, yeah. And that's also a really small question to ask yourself. What's the idea? Put it in a note, and does it relate to anything? And why? That's a really great addition also.
And why is, I mean, that for me, and why is where I can ask and why, and I'm just writing an article. I'm like, okay, here's the next article. Right? Yeah, and why is like, oof, that's a whole book, and why, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes it so much more powerful, because then you can revisit the same why in X weeks, months, or years, and then discover that you don't agree with yourself. So you can add to the why, right? You can add a why not or a different why. So it becomes richer whenever you encounter it, I guess.
I mean, I literally have little goosebumps just talking about it, because that end why is so generative to me. That's it, you know? Yes, connect your ideas, yes, but state why. And that is just like, we're running here with ideas at that point for me.
Is it also the writer's block solver?
Oh God, yeah. I would never have writer's block ever. Ever. No, it's too, I have writer overload. This is too much. Yeah. Yeah. No such thing as writer's block with a Zettelkasten.
I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on this particular question that we have here. Because in all appearances to me, you seem like a person that likes to do the work yourself. Mm-hmm. But now, since a couple of years, we've seen these generative AI tools pop up. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people talking about, you know, I'm going to apply this to my blog catalog or my PKM system, and I'm going to ask the generative AI to create stuff from that. What do you see happening, and what are your thoughts about that?
This comes up a lot in with regards to Zettelkasten, like using AI to show connections between ideas. There's a use for it for sure. I mean, there are times when I really want to see a connection between an idea and I can't, and I might like type it in. It's rare, but I do it because it's a tool. What I get is not always applicable, but it might just be just enough to kind of like just trigger some other thought. That tends to be what I find something like ChatGPT good for. Good enough to get me to think about something else that it didn't mention. So in that respect, I think it's great. If you're basing it on, I come across a few people now and again who are just all their connections are coming from, here's my notes. Tell me how they relate. You know, if you're going to do something with that information, great. If you just want to see the connections, then maybe it's just for aesthetic purposes. I don't know. I don't know how it affects our learning. I think we're still so young in even understanding even what learning is, let alone what learning is augmented by AI. I think it's like most other things. What's that graph they do, the hype graph? You know, it's like, here's the hype. It's like up here, but eventually it's going to land here and it'll be just a kind of tiny little aspect of how we engage with stuff, or it'll inform it. It'll change things a little bit, but it won't be like we've become cyborgs, which is what I think a lot of people think is going to happen.
No, it's just a new kind of toaster, basically.
It's a new toaster, and I like using my toaster, for toasting. That's it, though.
For toasting, right. So let's come back to your book for a last question. It's been out for a couple of months now, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
How does it feel? If you've written before, you've published before, how does this book perform? How do you feel about it now after having it written?
I love it. It's my favorite book. My favorite book ever. It really is. I'm genuinely happy with it. I think it's because of that narrow path. I chose a narrow path. I had a goal in mind, which was to create a book worthy of recommendation within the Zettelkasten PKM community. That's what I wanted. I wanted people to feel like they had a book they could say, hey, you're interested in Zettelkasten, or you're interested in PKM, but more so Zettelkasten, read this book. That's what I wanted people to do, because I really felt there was a deficit there. Every book that was out there had so many caveats. Mm-hmm. You know, you could read this, but it's got this, this, and this. You know, ignore that, do this. I just wanted people to have like something they could rely on. They felt like it was their own. It felt like the community had their own book. So I tried to write that book. I am happy to say that it is recommended all the time. And I look at all the spaces because I obsess over those things. So I'm watching people recommend it, and I'm extremely grateful for it. And yeah, it seems like for now it's a perennial seller. You know, like people are buying it. I market it, but very little. It's just word of mouth, which to me is the best way to go. I have plans to expand it. I already have started taking notes on ways to develop it more. Other
I'm
questions
so
that have come up.
I'm so not surprised about this.
Yeah, I mean, I have an area of my little system where I'm like, okay, this chapter can be, added to this. This new idea has come in. Let's add to that. I'm excited for that, but I have to give it time. Let it do its thing for a few years.
Yeah,
don't mess with it.
I guess you're definitely eating your own dog food there.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks for asking. But yes, I'm very happy with it, and people seem to be enjoying it, and it seems to be more so helping people. So that was my goal.
Yeah, and I think this will definitely help people because, as you said, because of the narrow focus. I think that, and we discussed this too, this will really help even people who are not writers, or who are not even aspiring to be writers. It will help them to dive into this, and especially the many people out there who do anything creative for their work. And I hope that most people will recognize that at least part of their work is a creative process, that they can really benefit from this. And And it's good to know that you, what you've also said is that Zettelkasten is not something, an end-all be-all. It's not the thing that you do everything with, but just discovering notes, linking notes, helping your thinking, that it's this could be a great tool for.
Yeah, I hope so.
So yeah, this conversation actually was for me quite an eye opener, I have to say. And I've already talked with a lot of people about Zettelkasten and personal knowledge management, and I'm only now discovering the advantage of just letting go of structure and using a PKM for something to link information. And this is a major eye opener. So
great.
Thank you for that, at least.
Yeah. Let's hope our listeners have similar experiences. One of the learnings I take away from this is not so much it's all the things that Mark said, but it's also about you don't know what you don't know. So the only way to solve that problem is by reaching out to others. We've now discovered you, Bob, but you've been around, and I heard you mention a couple other names. Who should be on our invite list for next episodes of this podcast, you think?
Oh, interesting question. Well, if you're talking about digital health, essentially, in some ways, it feels like, I know that's not the term you use for it. The term you use is
digital fitness.
Fitness, yeah. Yes, digital fitness. I equate health and fitness because I'm a long time yoga practitioner. So they go together for me. I mean, if you can get Andy Matushak in here, I don't know if you've had him on your podcast, but Andy has a spot for himself within this PKM world that is highly respected. I mean, I love Andy being in this community. He's kind of in his own place, and we kind of all revere him in the Zettelkasten scene a little bit. He's doing something else, not involved in like strictly Zettelkasten stuff. In fact, he's well beyond doing many other things, but he's just sort of up there on his hill doing his thing. And he'd be a great person to talk to. I mean, I would love to hear you talk with him.
We do not mind interviewing people who are on a hill. They don't have to be like knee deep or waist deep into this personal knowledge management community thing. So,
I feel like he would have so much to say with regards to what your interests are.
Cool. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah. It sounds like a nice challenge too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
We can highly recommend, I think, your book.
Thank you.
And you offer courses as well, right?
Yeah, I have one coming up in January, mid-January. It's basically like a master course in writing with a Zettelkasten. So building out your writing system, creating a system that is robust and, you know, bulletproof in a way, you know, a system that can like handle the things you throw at it and use that for writing. So I'm actually launching that in a few days, funny enough. But yeah, that'll be out in, it'll actually start. It's a live course. It'll start in January.
Okay. Well, definitely give us the link and we'll make sure that it'll appear, because now you've said it, so we might as well promote it too. if you give us the link, then we'll make sure it's...
We'll make that happen.
Great.
Anywhere on the post on this. So.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Well, again, thank you for your time. I'm about ready to press this record button once more so that we can stop the recording. Thank you for the recommendation. And to our listeners, this is the first in a new series for the podcast of Digital Fitness. Be aware that we do have an online community, which you can find at start.digitalfitness.com. If you want to join it, you're most welcome. And we might even be able to lure Bob into that one too, but you'll only find out if you join the community. So having said that, thank you so much for your attention. Bob, thank you for being here. Mark, thank you for joining me, and talk to you next time.